A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 23, Ija. The good thing about the Way of the Rising Phoenix was that it left no room for panic. Din fell for a handful of heartbeats, plummeting 50 or 60 feet, heart in his throat and wind roaring in his ears, and then trained instinct took over and pushed past Din's pounding heart, his swooping stomach. He activated his borrowed jetpack, thrusters growling, and stabilized in the sky. The grip of gravity loosened. Din picked a direction blindly and leaned into it, pushing the jetpack as fast as it could go. Din's armorer was better than Axe Woves's if he had one. Din's old jetpack had let Din fly like a swooping starbird. This borrowed one was bigger, older. It couldn't reach the same speeds as his first jetpack. Din felt more like an Urushai using it than anything else, clumsy and lumbering and slow. But it didn't really matter. All that mattered was getting away. Din shot out over the desert with the wind still howling in his ears. Sand tore at him. He didn't roll over in the air to see if the blast doors around Boba's rooms had slammed shut. Din was afraid that they hadn't, that Boba would be right behind him, and he was afraid of worse. That Boba had turned away, left Din to fall. He wouldn't, Din thought, struggling to remember the conviction in his voice when he'd said that he was with Din, too. Boba had sounded like he meant it at the time, but Boba had thought that Din was someone he wasn't. Mandalorian and Mandalore. Now that Boba knew the truth. Din pushed his borrowed jetpack to its very limits, desperate to outpace that thought, that fear. The palace was gone in moments anyway, whipped out of sight. The desert below flashed wide and silver, rolling dunes and jutting ridges, the bones of old outposts and settlements gleaming where they weren't swallowed up by the sand. Everything Din had grown familiar with, the palace's sprawling grounds, the jumbled streets of Mos Eisley, the packed down roads into and away from the palace, was gone. Some of the pressure in Din's chest eased a little when he realized that. Realized that Din was outside of Boba's immediate reach, at least for now. That Din was somewhere where no one knew him, where there wasn't anyone around to know him. The sky was safer than the palace. Not much could get at Din up here. Not Paz with his anger or Boba with his expectations. Not much could catch Din either. Boba could manage it in his starship, maybe, or another Mandalorian could do the same with a jetpack, but now Din didn't know of any other Mandalorian who'd try to catch him. Most of the ones Din knew would just let Din go. Maybe hope that he died somewhere in the desert, fighting a crate dragon maybe, or a bladeback boar. Then they could say that Din had at least died with honor, on his feet, fighting to the death like he was supposed to. Died with as much honor as an Arrueti can have, at least. Din was almost fast enough to outrun that thought, too. To lose it in the roar of the wind in his ears and the sand stinging his face, but not quite. The thought caught and stuck like a burr working its way into the folds of his cloak. That doesn't make any sense. How could dying, in combat or in the wilderness, like an old King Anuba wandering off into the desert rather than face the challenges brought by his pups, have more honor in it than staying alive to help the tribe? Paz is hurt, Din thought. Strill and Jaig are just kids. Boba and Fennec are standing alone. They're up against a bigger, stronger enemy. How could dying out here, leaving them to face Gorga on their own, be more honorable than staying alive to help? Paz wanted to kill Din. Din could deal with that, probably. Paz would expect Din to roll over and let him do it, too. That was the way they'd been taught, after all. Better to kill those who broke the creed, the Dharmanda, than to let them live and suffer. It was a mercy. It was safer for the tribe. Din knew that. Every Mandalorian who'd ever sworn to the Creed knew that. Someone who'd become Darmanda didn't have the bonds to the covert that a true Mandalorian warrior had. Didn't have the support, the protection. The Darmande were vulnerable. Outsiders could hunt them, could pick them off easily. The way of the Wurek was closer at hand. But too many others need my help, Din thought. I have to help them. Krees, I'm sworn to her quest. And Boba's helped me too many times. I owe him. I can't repay it all, but I owe him. And Paz, the Foundlings, Grogu. Din couldn't outfly his obligation to them, couldn't shake off 20 long years of habit of caring for the covert, couldn't shed more years of fierce, prickly, sometimes sideways devotion to Paz as Din's brother. He couldn't outpace those things any more than he could run away from the way he felt about Grogu. I don't want to outpace it. Din loved Grogu. Grogu was easy to love, that was true. Almost everyone who'd ever met the kid loved him. But that didn't mean that Din should stop caring about him, just because the kid had more beings in his corner now, more teachers who looked out for him. Didn't mean that Din should pull his own care back from the kid like a crate dragon hoarding its pearl. By that argument, I shouldn't stop trying to protect Paz in the covert, either. Just because Paz had found Jaeg and Strill, just because Din wouldn't ever walk the halls of the covert again, credits in his pockets and Beskar in his hands, didn't mean that Din should stop trying to keep them safe, to help. I'll never be Paz's brother again. He might hate me for the rest of his life, but... But, Din thought. Through the tightness in his chest and the panic still flickering around his mind like a campfire that had spilled its banks, taking half the forest with it. That doesn't mean that I should leave him to die. That he should ask me to leave him to die. That Paz should feel dishonored by accepting Din's help, like Din was wrought in a wound, something to be cut out. Din loved Paz. Din was going to help him, to keep him alive, whether Paz liked it or not, because that was what the covert did. Isn't it? Din thought. Isn't it what we do? What we're supposed to do? Din had managed to outpace some of his animal panic, but he couldn't outrun the confusion that had rushed in to replace it. Bewilderment. A sense of loss so deep and profound it felt like Duracrete pouring wet and cold into the hollow places in Din's chest. The places where his creed had once lived. His conviction. Confusion and grief hardened inside him and dragged him down towards the sands. This time, Din didn't bother trying to fight gravity. He let it pull him down, jetpack stuttering, towards the Great Dune Sea. He was still mostly blind with panic and the wind, so the descent was sloppy, erratic. Din was trailing smoke. He saw tall, crooked shadows rearing up in front of him. Din didn't care. He couldn't help but think, bizarrely, of that first conversation he'd had with Luke Skywalker. Weeks ago now, when Skywalker had tried to explain to Din what the dark side of the Force was, what it felt like. "If you fall from high enough up, gravity will also kill you," he'd said. "The Force is like that." Din wasn't falling, exactly. Landing wouldn't kill him. It would hurt, but it wouldn't kill him. Good, Din thought, the edges of his mind still a snapping, snarling wildfire. I want it to hurt. Din hit the sand hard, knees protesting. He kept his feet for a split second, but he'd come in too fast. Momentum carried him forward, shoulder first, into the side of a dune. Sand sprayed. The jetpack's thrusters whined and spluttered. The force of Din's landing scratched his cheeks and the leather of his gloves. His bad arm sparked white, pain shuddering behind his teeth, flashing in his eyes. Din didn't care. His teachers would have made him run laps around the covert if they'd seen him stumble through a landing that badly, but he didn't care about that either. This, the crash, the landing, the sand as it shifted and made room for Din's body, felt right. It felt like where Din was supposed to be, like what he was supposed to be. A dead thing soon to be swallowed by the desert. Soon to be bones and bits of gleaming armor. Everything Din had ever believed in told Din that this was right. But something else flickered in the back of Din's mind. The thought was cool, almost a balm. I'm not dead, Din thought. Maybe he should want to be dead. That was what the creed taught, after all. Better to be dead than dishonored. Din had believed that. He'd wanted Kara and Karga to leave him in the cantina. He would have stood against the Imperials, given Kara and Grogu some cover, and then he would have died without showing his face. Died the right way. But I'm not dead. And I don't want to be. Din liked being alive, even if it meant being alive as someone who'd become Darmanda. He would never be a part of the tribe again, but that didn't mean that Din's life was empty or burned out like a fire that had devoured all of its fuel and left only ash behind. I have allies, Din thought. Kara and Karga and Bo-Katan Kryze. And more than allies. Boba and Fennec, Vanth, whatever Luke Skywalker and his little cluster of Jedi were to Din. I have friends. I have work to do. Others who share meals with me, who make sure I have the supplies that I need, the company. That was what tribe was, wasn't it? Meals shared, Jorika over calf and red tea, someone checking over Din's gear, slipping Bacta into his field kit when he wasn't looking. Vanth had gone out on patrol with Din. Fennec sparred with him. The Jedi, even Kukruk, had shared their home with Din, letting him borrow some of their calm, still peace. They'd let him sit in their overgrown garden until the noise in his head had cut out. Grogu just loved Din with the easy, uncomplicated love a foundling had for their rescuer. And Boba. And Boba. Din thought, face pressed into the sand. Boba. Din didn't have the words to describe all that Boba had done for him. Sparred and wrestled and played with Din, inflicted hurt and soothed it away. Quieted Din's thoughts. Touched me, Din thought, the sense memory of it strong. So strong he felt it even through the last wild edges of his panic, his fear. Boba's fingertips tracing nonsense patterns on his back, a broad palm pressed against the bottom of Din's ribs. That's what tribe is, Din thought. Clan. Elite. I've lost the covert, but I'm not alone. And Din liked it, this odd little patchwork group of friends and allies he'd stumbled into. He had liked seeing Boba's little outfit grow into a little empire. He'd liked seeing Mos Pelgo streets expand. He'd liked getting to know Fennec Shand and Nora, liked wrestling with Boba and spending nights by his side. And I want to see Grogu grow up, too. It had put Din's heart to ease seeing the kid settle in with the other Jedi. Din had liked Skywalker's gentle humor, just like he'd enjoyed Nora's teasing. Had smiled to see the Jedi younglings and their interest in the world around them. Din had even liked his odd sort of rivalry with Kukruk. The little competition they'd started, Kukruk chasing Din away from lightsaber lessons and Din coming up with more inventive ways to watch them. Din didn't know how much time it would take for Grogu to grow up. If he was 50 standard now and not talking, Din knew that he wouldn't live to see the kid get much bigger, much older. He wouldn't get to see Grogu mature into an adult and take his place in the galaxy. But another inch I could live to see, maybe long enough to hear him say his first words, to show him how to use a lightsaber. That was what Mandalorian fathers did, wasn't it? Taught their children how to swing a cod, showed them the first steps of a self-defense kata, helped them put on their first set of armor. I don't want to die. Even if even if this grief will be with me for the rest of my life, this heavy, bone-cracking sense of loss. Din hadn't let himself feel it aboard Strill's Huntress when Paz had called Din Arueti, outsider. But he felt it now. I'm lost. It hurt. Din had been stabbed, he'd been shot, he'd been cut and burned and had broken bones, had been concussed so many times that his ears never really stopped ringing, but this. Din had heard the elder warriors trying to save the life of a warrior named Hollin once. Din hadn't had much to do with Hollin. He'd been a good decade older than Din and his age mates, and Hollin had come to join their covert from another a few months before the covert had moved to Kashyyyk. Din and his age mates had loved Kashyyyk. The abandoned village they'd lived in had been so remote that the Alor had granted them permission to run through the forests like adolescent tacks, scrambling through the trees and swimming in Kashyyyk's deep lakes, exploring the strange, luminous depths of the Shadowlands without an adult who steps behind them everywhere they'd gone. Din and his friends hadn't ever had so much freedom, and they'd gone a little bit wild with it. Too wild, maybe, Din thought, remembering some of the bruises and scrapes he'd collected on Kashyyyk, the broken arm he'd earned falling out of a tree while looking for Dawbird eggs. But Hollin hadn't liked Kashyyyk much. Pallas had been the Baroya for the tribe at the time and had been out hunting more often than not, which meant that the rest of the older warriors had been confined planetside. Hollin had chafed at the rules. The Alor had done her best to bleed some of the pressure off, letting Hollin roam over half the hemisphere hunting for food, but Hollin still hadn't been around very much. Din and the other foundlings hadn't really noticed his absence either. They'd been too busy exploring. Too busy challenging each other to jump off high branches or stick their arms down slig holes. But they'd noticed Hollin the day he'd come back from hunting Linox. Din and Paz and Annika had been too busy running wild through the Roshir Forest to pay too much attention to their surroundings, but Kashyyyk hadn't been a very safe place to live. A third of the planet had been under Imperial control, a third had been hotly contested between the Imps and the Wookiee Resistance, and the last third had been a giant, irritable predator that thought that Mandalorians might make tasty snacks. Hollin hadn't run across Minox on his last hunt. He'd run into a Ygurr. It had torn Hollin to pieces. He'd had enough armor on that he hadn't died flat out, not right away. Hollin had managed to kill the thing, had even managed to drag it back to the covert, and then Hollin had collapsed while Din and the other foundlings watched, shocked and horrified, and drowned in his own blood. The other warriors had done their best, but Hollin had been what the warriors called Hokanish. For once the Alor hadn't scolded them for using a Mandalorian word, either. Maybe that's why the incident stuck out in Din's memory. Hollin had been Hokanish, shredded. Hollin had died before the sun had set behind the trees. Din felt a little like that now, chewed up and spit out, cut into strips, torn to pieces, odds and ends scattered across half the galaxy. Din had lost his creed on Morak, his son on the light cruiser, his brother on Arcanus. Maybe he'd even lost Boba's friendship, his warm regard, here on Tatooine. But I don't, Din thought, feel dead. Hurt, and not the good, clarifying kind of hurt either, the focusing kind of hurt, the kind of hurt Din had learned from Boba. But not dead. Maybe that was proof that Din had always been a coward, had always been the covert's weak link, had never been a true Mandalorian at all, but I don't want to die. I don't feel like I should want to die. I don't know who it would help if I did. Din could shoulder the burden of being Darmanda. He'd proved that already. He'd broken the creed weeks ago when he hadn't gone mad, hadn't started walking the way of the Wurrek, hadn't gone back on his word, betrayed his friends, suddenly started hurting children or small animals. He hadn't sold Boba out for his Beskar, and Din wasn't a mindless beast, either. He was just himself. I don't need to die. I'm not a danger to the tribe, to the coverts. And Din kept circling back to the idea of honor. a Mandalorian had a Mandalorian's honor. Din wasn't Mandalorian anymore. Thinking about it made his chest ache, but it wasn't like Mandalorians were the only beings in the galaxy with any honor, who kept their word. Even the Allure admitted that, Din thought. That was part of the reason why she'd steered Din towards the Bounty Hunters Guild instead of the Black Sun or the Pike Syndicate. The Bounty Hunters Guild had its own sort of creed, and the Allure had known that, recognized it. So, I can't have a Mandalorian's honor, not anymore. Din had known that. But I can have a bounty hunter's honor. I can have my own honor. It would be weaker than the honor of a Mandalorian, because a Mandalorian's honor was also the tribe's. That was what the tribe was for. Strength for everyone who was part of the covert. Support. Honor for all of them, and a shoulder to lean on if one stumbled, an ear to listen if one had doubts. The tribe was a dozen sets of eyes watching for weakness. Din would have to be more careful now. He'd have to be smart, he thought. Honest. Watchful. He wouldn't have Paz to keep him in line anymore, wouldn't have the Allure's advice, Annika's insights. Din wouldn't be able to listen to the Elder Warriors talk about their youth and what they'd learned, and wouldn't chew on those lessons for a few days and then pass them on to the Foundlings once Din had taken their meaning into his own heart. But I'm still myself. And Din kept his word. He'd been Darmanda since the moment he'd taken his helmet off on Morak, but he'd still kept his promise to Grogu. He'd gone back for the kid. He'd kept his word to Bo-Katan, too. He'd helped her defeat Gideon. He'd gone to Mandalore with her. And Boba. Din had kept almost every promise he'd made to Boba. He hadn't been honest, not about being a Mandalorian, but Boba hadn't asked. And he'd agreed that Din would have to keep some secrets to himself. Din had only promised Boba honesty on his knees. He hadn't promised it for every aspect of Boba's business. Boba hadn't asked for it for everything. Just for the time that Din and Boba shared together. The floggings, the nights that Boba took control from Din's hands. I can still honor my promises. Din had promised to help the covert. That was part of the creed. Help for the tribe, aid and assistance, protection, shelter, defense. Din could still do all of that. He had the resources to help Paz, the skills. Din hadn't lost that when he'd become Darmanda. If Paz refused that help, if the creed told Paz to refuse that help when Paz was hurt and had kids depending on him. If the creed demands that, the creed is wrong. Din hadn't realized that until he'd gone to get Bo-Katan's help rescuing the kid. By his creed, he wasn't supposed to be near her. She was a Mandalorian who showed her face. She was an outsider. But I needed help, and she was willing to give it, Din thought. Because she's Mandalorian too, even if she's different. Boba helped me for the same reason. Grogu was a child in danger, and Mandalorians help children who are in danger. If the creed tells Paz to turn his back on that, if it told me to turn my back on Grogu, the creed is wrong. Thinking that made panic catch up with Din all at once. It hooked its claws into him, pulled tight at the skin of his chest, scratched his lungs open. His breath came in short and fast. His throat was dry with sand. But out here, Din was in the open desert. There was no one around to see Din's panic, to take advantage of his vulnerability. Here it was safe to panic. Well, Din thought distantly, in that part of himself that he was unable to shut down. The watchful hunter, the foundling always waiting for bombs to start falling from the sky. Safe-er. The desert is never safe. But the desert wasn't Boba's rooms, the circle of Boba's arms. The desert was wide and dark and empty. but it wasn't the look in Boba's eyes. So Din gave himself over to panic for a while. Sometimes, if nothing else worked, the only thing to do was ride the panic out. The watchful hunter in the corner of Din's mind remembered that. Din's body was just a body, after all, an animal, same as a bantha or an anuba or a jundabird. Panic wasn't sustainable, and Din's body would eventually realize that. All Din had to do was wait it out. It wasn't comfortable, but Din could survive it. He'd already decided to survive it. Pain lanced through his chest, his heartbeat wavered. Din's breath caught and caught and caught. If he'd been standing, he would have fallen over, too dizzy to move. His vision flashed. But Din was already down, cushioned by sand. He wasn't flying anymore, so he didn't need to see. He just needed to wait it out. The watchful hunter knew how to do it. The foundling knew how to do it, too. The creed is wrong. The thought made his ears ring. Gradually, Din came back to himself. It was a fitful process, stopping and starting, breath stuttering in his throat. But after a time, Din had his heartbeat under control again. His breath slowed. He was able to pull air into his lungs, and the shaking faded to faint tremors, more from exhaustion than grief or pain or fear. Din was weak and dizzy and sore. His chest ached, his throat was raw, and a headache had lodged itself behind his right eye like a shard of metal, searing and hot. But Din was alive. The panic had passed. The thought he'd had, the thought Boba had given him, standing in front of the windows, was still there. The creed is wrong. Thinking it made Din's heart lurch again, pressure stabbing into Din's chest, but he was too tired to panic this time. He was just blank, exhausted. The thought was still there. It rang through Din's head like struck Beskar. The creed is... it could be wrong. Maybe, Din thought, tiredly rolling over and forcing himself to sit up, shaking his head to clear it of sand and bad thoughts. Not all of it is wrong, but part of it. Part of it is. Might be. I don't know. He sat there with that for a full minute. I don't know, Din said out loud. His voice scraped its way out of his mouth. The words fell into his lap like stones. It could be wrong, but I don't know. He didn't even know how to think about it, the creed being wrong, how to pick it apart to choose what was right and what wasn't. I'm not supposed to choose. It's not something that's supposed to be part right and part wrong. It's the creed. It just is. The creed was Beskar, pure Beskar. Din would admit that he'd spent more time glaring at Paz than listening to his teachers during his earliest lessons in the covert, but Din remembered that much. True Beskar was pure. It had nothing else in it, no inclusions, no trace bits of other metals. It was treated and tempered and manipulated so that it was free even of the earth and rocks it had grown in. That's why Beskar was so strong. Outsiders called it Mandalorian iron, but Beskar wasn't iron, it wasn't steel, it was Beskar. The creed is like that. Pure, true, strong because of it. There were no cracks to exploit in purified Beskar, and there were no cracks in the creed. I'm the one with cracks. Flaws. Din's teachers had been plain about that, too. The creed itself was pure, but those who followed it sometimes weren't. The way of the Mandalore was not for the weak. Only the strong could keep to it. Din's stomach lurched unpleasantly. He thought of Boba aboard the Huntress, the way his voice had dropped when he talked about Death Watch. They said that they were the only Mandalorians, Boba had said, because they were strong and everyone else was weak. Something cold and horrible curled up in Din's gut, rattling like a spit viper about to strike. How did we find the Creed? Din wondered. Boba had said that Death Watch hadn't had a creed, their only law had been strength. But Din's people had laws, rules. Not just that they couldn't show their faces, they had laws for all sorts of things. Who could leave the covert and why, how an Allord was chosen, what was owed when a brother or sister called for help. All of that was part of the creed, too. So we're not as lawless as Death Watch, at least. That was a comforting thought. Cold comfort, but still, Din would take what comfort he could for the moment. But Boba's not wrong. When Boba had said that Din was a man and that men sometimes broke their promises, went back on their word, men weren't Beskar. Men could be weak. But I knew that when I swore the creed. Din had known that he could theoretically fail, that he could break the creed. He'd known that he could lose a fight and lose his helmet, could get hurt or die, could wake up one day and just decide not to be Mandalorian anymore. Din had sworn to himself that he wouldn't do that, but I was just a kid. Kids believed in all sorts of impossible things. Din swallowed and scrubbed his face. He'd grazed his cheek during the landing, his forehead. The scratches were gritty with sand. He didn't want to be thinking about this. He'd never expected to have to think about this. Din had expected to be Mandalorian, and then he'd expected to be dead. He had never thought about having to live like this. But I do want to live, and I'm going to live. So, Din thought, wiping sand and tears out of his eyes, chest sore. I guess I have to think about it. Not thinking about it, pretending that everything was still the same, that Din was the same, would be a lie. And I, Din thought, looking around, am not a liar. Din wouldn't go back to pretending that nothing had happened on Morak. He'd tried that, and it had landed him in this mess in the first place. If Din had just told Boba when Boba had first called Din to the palace... No, Din told himself firmly. There was no use in trying to jump backwards through hyperspace. Din had done what he'd done. He couldn't change that. He'd done it. And now I have to live with it. The truth of that settled somewhere inside of Din's chest. There wasn't much room for it, not right now, between his expanded grief and shredded lungs, but it was there. Either the creed is wrong, or I am. Either Din was the one who'd failed on Morak, who hadn't been smart enough to find a way to get Grogu back without showing his face, hadn't been fierce enough to convince Mayfield to go into the mess hall, hadn't been brave enough to go in, blasters drawn, and force Valen Hass to just give him Gideon's coordinates. Or the creed was wrong to ask Din to choose between being Mandalorian and protecting his kid. Protecting Grogu wasn't wrong. Din knew that, like he knew the way his knees ached when he changed climates too fast, like he knew the steps of a Parbevi Kata or the sound the Razor Crest had made as Din prepared to jump into hyperspace. Putting the kid's life above Din's own was right. That was what a parent was supposed to do, or at least what an elder of the tribe was supposed to do if a child had no father or mother. The truth of that was Beskar, forged and tested. As soon as the armorer had given Grogu into Din's care, she'd charged him with making sure that Grogu made it. That he made it to his own people or lived to adulthood. If that came at the cost of Din's own life. The creed tells us that it's worth it. That foundlings were the future. Worth protecting at any cost. If the cost of a child's life was the creed itself, I paid it, Din thought. I did. And I'd do it again. So if I wasn't wrong to break my creed. The thought was so enormous, so vast and dark and deep, a black hole in everything Din thought that he'd known, that Din had to put his head between his knees and breathe very slowly and very deeply for several minutes to stave off another bone-shaking bout of panic. Or at least, Din made himself continue, breaking the realization down into something smaller, something that he could at least get his head around or hold in his hands like a stone. Boba's not wrong. A creed with no give to it, Boba had said. Din swallowed again. He made himself put his head up, made himself open his eyes, made himself turn into the cool night breeze of Tatooine, the wind stinging the scratches and scrapes on his face. A creed with no give to it, Boba had said. No mercy is not a creed worth following. How many of the other warriors scattered across the galaxy in their coverts with foundlings of their own to care for had faced Din's choice? Save the child or keep to the creed. How many of my own people faced that choice underneath Nevarro City? Din hadn't been there when the Empire had decided to punish the covert for Din's mistakes, but he'd seen the aftermath. Dozens dead, empty armor, his brothers and sisters scattered. How many of them had kept their helmets on, their faces covered, until they died? How many had been unmasked beforehand? Gideon was behind that attack. Din frowned. His chest was very cold. He knew us. He knew us. He knows Mandalorians. He would have tried to dishonor as many of us as he could. He would have made it a game. A terrible, awful game. One Din could barely even bring himself to think about. One that left Gideon as the only winner. Din shivered. Half of it was the temperature. Tatooine was cold at night, the Great Dune Sea shedding all of its heat as soon as the suns were behind the horizon. And the other half was Din's panic, which had left him clammy and dazed. A creed with no give to it. Maybe the creed was Beskar. Beskar was hard and cold and unyielding sometimes, merciless. It was armor, that was the point. But the warrior inside the armor wasn't made of Beskar. Din had learned that the hard way. His arm twinged, his head hurt. If you hit someone, Din reasoned, anyone, hard enough, no matter what kind of armor they're wearing, they'll shatter. Losing the kid, Din couldn't imagine losing the kid. It would have shattered Din. Breaking the creed had broken him, but had broken Din like a rusted beam or a weak bone. Broken bones can be mended, Din thought, flexing his bowed arm. Broken metal can be welded over. But a shattered bone. That made Din's thoughts turn towards Paz again, and Din sighed. Paz and I have always been too similar, Din thought, wry humor beginning to shake itself off and crawl out of the dark hole in Din's chest. Din had been as fierce an enforcer of the creed as Paz. Paz had challenged Din on Nevarro, called him weak, called him a coward, but Din had nearly drawn down on Cobb Vanth over the creed. He'd told Kreese and her Talvode that they weren't Mandalorian. He'd tried to deny Boba his father's armor until he'd understood that Jango Fett had been a foundling. Din had been rigid. He'd been inflexible. But now... Framing the creed in Boba's terms helped, made it manageable to think about, even if thinking about it still hurt. If we'd thought that... There was a way we could show our faces, Din thought slowly, wincing even as he did it. If we showed our faces when we had to. If it was life or death for our children, not even for ourselves. Then maybe more of us would still be alive. If there was a way to break the creed and then make up for it, to weld over the break. A year in seclusion, some kind of service, a punishment, something. Din's tribe wouldn't be down a hunter. Paz wouldn't feel dishonor just for letting Din save his life. But if we thought that we could break it, Din thought, hearing the Alor's measured voice in his head, what's to keep us following it at all? If there's no way to atone for breaking it, for exposing the whole covert to that kind of risk. Din shook his head. I don't have an answer. He was going around in circles now, chasing maybes and what-ifs. Din doubted that anyone had an answer. Boba, Kreese, even Din's Alor. Paz didn't have an answer. He'd been ready to condemn Din for breaking the creed. Had condemned him, named him an outsider, even though Din had explained why he'd done what he'd done. I've been ready to condemn myself. That thought hadn't come in the Alor's voice. It had come in Boba's, thick with reproach. Something prickled underneath Din's chest. Another thought, or another revelation, or another bout of blind panic, Din wasn't sure. But he knew that he was too tired to face it right now. There wasn't any time. Paz is still hurt. Stubborn, angry with Din, ready to kill him, but still injured. Paz's foundlings still weren't safe, neither were Strill and Shag. Boba and Fennec and Nura and Geeta, Kasik and Zero, Theron. Everyone in Boba's palace was in danger, and so were all of Boba's allies, everyone who worked for him or with him, which meant that Vanth and his network were in danger too. Gorga the Hutt was taking aim at Boba Fett, and everyone who stood with or even near Boba was at risk too. Din had to protect them. He had to. Half of them were in this mess because of him, and he owed it to them to keep them as safe as he could. I don't have time to try and fix what's wrong with the creed. To even think if Din could fix it. It did help a little to have Boba's voice in Din's head too, not just the Alor's. To have Boba's thoughts and feelings there, his shock and his scathing anger. Not at me, Din thought, recalling their argument. Now he was decently sure he could do it without panicking. He was too tired for more panic. He wasn't mad at me. Or entirely mad at me, anyway. I think he was angry for me. Din wasn't sure why exactly Boba would be angry for Din. Boba made it clear that he didn't follow Din's creed and never had. But Din had figured out weeks ago that he probably wouldn't ever understand Boba. He didn't need to understand Boba. Boba was constant without needing Din's understanding. He was loyal and steadfast. Having Boba's voice in Din's head was good. It was good. It made Din feel like he maybe hadn't ruined everything. Carked it up, yes, he'd definitely done that, bolting out of the window like a startled Jundabird. Bird. But ruined it? Maybe not that. Din ran a hand through his hair, wincing at the feel of sand all through it. There was even sand in his ears, working into the creases around his eyes, his forehead. The texture of it was irritating, but grounding, too. The sensations, the rasp of skin against sand, anchored Din firmly into his body. Din blew out a breath and got his legs underneath himself, though he didn't heave himself up to his feet quite yet. Now that he'd managed to calm down some, Din felt a vague sense of embarrassment tugging at the bottom of his ribs. I ran away, he thought. The embarrassment sharpened, took on the edge of shame. Din shouldn't have run. I'm not a coward. He should have stayed. Should have... He needed some time to calm down, to stop feeling so cornered. But he shouldn't have run. What does Boba think? Din hadn't had any time between Strill showing up and returning to Tatooine with six other Mandalorians in tow to process things. He'd lurched from crisis to crisis. Strill's appearance, the realization that Din's covert was related to Death Watch, the chaos on Arcanis, Din's confession to Paz, and then another confession to Boba, and all that had come out after it. Din had done it all without any time to stop and think, to sit with his thoughts and try to order them all together, to fit them inside his head. But Boba hasn't had any time to think about anything either. It was never a good idea to corner a Mandalorian. Din had been pushed back, hounded by his own thoughts, by the look in Boba's eyes. But Boba... Boba just found out that I might be part of the same clan that killed his family, Din thought, rubbing his forehead. Who made Boba hate other Mandalorians. We didn't have any time to really talk about it. They'd had a few minutes aboard Strill's ship, but that had been about it. I kind of cornered Boba as much as he cornered me. Din dragged his hand down his face, guilt slinking in to twine around the shame in his gut. Din was... He'd had a rough few days, he could admit that to himself. A rough season, even, between Gideon and the light cruiser and all of the various little stresses in between. But I behaved like a novice. Like a trainee out on his first hunt, letting his body run away with his head. A seasoned warrior, a good fighter, didn't give in to panic. Din had survived more firefights and more battles than he could remember. He hadn't panicked during a fight since he was a fresh foundling overwhelmed by the steps of a sparring form. Din and Boba hadn't been fighting exactly. No one had exchanged blows or gone for their blaster. But still, they'd been close to fighting. Close enough that Din's body had thought itself caught. Trapped. I still should have kept my head. Being Darmanda wasn't new. Din had thought about it. He should have been ready. He'd kept his head when he'd told Paz. He didn't know why he'd been able to tell Cobb Vanth or Paz without panicking, but had fallen apart in front of Boba. Well, Din thought, taking stock of himself. I know part of why I panicked, I think. He'd left his helmet behind. His spear, everything that he'd taken off to leave on Boba's work table. But he still had the darksaber. It hadn't fallen off during his flight. It hadn't even fallen off when Din had landed and stumbled face first into a sand dune. It was still there, resting against his hip, so small and light and familiar now that Din almost didn't notice it. The Mandalore, Din thought. That was what Boba had called Din. The leader. The... Din still wasn't clear if Mandalore had a king or not, an emperor, a captain, or even a chieftain. There were the Alore, the tribe leaders, but above them... In Din's covert, decisions that were too big for one Alore to decide were decided by a council of Alore. There was no one Alore who was higher than another. The Alor who needed help making a decision called a council of at least two others, and then that council made decisions that would affect all of the coverts together. But the Mandalor, that sounds like the leader of, what, all Mandalorians? And carrying the Darksaber around, that made Din the Mandalor? Din knew for a fact that no one down in the covert would know what the Darksaber was, what Mandalor meant. If Din walked down among them now with the Darksaber on his hip, he'd just be... I'd just be an outsider with a laser sword, he thought dryly. The Darksaber wasn't going to impress Paz the next time Din and Paz saw each other. I don't want it. Din unhooked the Darksaber from his belt and held it in his hand. I've never wanted it. Bo-Katan did want it. Din had seen the hunger in her face when he'd walked onto the light cruiser's bridge, kid in one hand, Darksaber in the other. She did want it. She wanted all of Mandalore. She'd even told Din that much. It was her family's right to rule. Her sister had once been Mandalore's duchess. Bo-Katan had taken the planet from someone named Maul. She'd done her best to rule it, even as the Empire had circled the Mandalore sector like starving Vornskers, waiting for any show of weakness. But if she wants it so badly, why doesn't she just take it? Din had offered the Darksaber to Bo-Katan half a dozen times by now. If she really does want it, she can have it. She could have had it, I tried to give it to her before Skywalker even showed up. But something Boba had said stuck out in Din's mind now, a circuit for the switchboard Din had missed until now. "You won it in combat, didn't you?" Boba had said. Din's thoughts spun. Boba had said that Gideon had taken the Darksaber from Kreese in combat, too. Gideon had taken it some time during the fall of Mandalore, when the Empire had finally turned on the planet and started to glass them all. Does that mean that Gideon was the Mandalore? Or that he had a claim to be, at least? Din thought about that for a second, then pushed the thought away hard. Gideon couldn't be the Mandalore. He couldn't be any kind of a lord at all. Din didn't know what the Mandalore was exactly, aside from what he could put together from the parts of the word that he knew, but Gideon was not Mandalorian. He wasn't. He had no Beskar, no creed, no helmet. And even if being Mandalorian wasn't contingent on any of those things, Din was pretty sure that Gideon wasn't from Mandalore either. He followed no way or creed or codex. He is not one of us, Din thought viciously. He couldn't help but include himself in that, in us. Din had broken his creed, but he'd never hurt a child. No Mandalorian, no true Mandalorian, would hurt a kid the way Gideon had hurt Grogu. Din was sure of it. That was Beskar, too. But he'd had the Darksaber, and Kreese wanted to get it back from him. No, Din realized, slowing down. He forced himself to think instead of react. He had to remind himself that he was safe out here, alone and away from prying eyes and expectations he couldn't match or meet. Din had the time to think. He should take it. He should try and put all of the pieces together, like a wooden puzzle box or the parts of a holocron. Not just get it back, Din thought. If she only wanted it back, she could have taken it from me when I offered it to her. She wanted to win it. Kreese had claimed Gideon as her enemy before they'd all boarded the light cruiser. She'd wanted to fight him. So she could win this. Din turned the hilt of the Darksaber over in his hands. So she could win this and what? Rule with it? Become the king of Mandalore again? The Darksaber didn't look like the weapon of a king. It was unusual, that was true. It was something Din had never seen before, not until he'd met Ahsoka Tano and Caladan. But once, the Darksaber probably hadn't been that unusual. There were hardly any Jedi left anymore, but before the Clone Wars, there had apparently been thousands of them. Din didn't know many Jedi, but the ones he did know all had lightsabers. Another lightsaber, even one as odd-looking as the Darksaber, couldn't have been that uncommon 30 or 40 years ago. The Darksaber wasn't even made out of Beskar like Din's spear was. Din would believe that his spear belonged to a king before he'd believe the same of the Darksaber. The Darksaber's hilt was made of just a plain, simple metal, something dark and matte, chipped and scuffed. There was nothing on it that Din would associate with an Alor either. No bits of gold, no intricate patterns or designs cut into it to mark battles won or enemies defeated. It was just a weapon. Practical. Strange. Garking useful in its way. The Darksaber had cut through vines and ribs both like they'd been made of flimsy. It could cut anything but Beskar. But it was just a cud, a sword. Why does Kreese want it so much? Din curled his fingers over the hilt and thought about pitching the thing as far as he could into the sands. He had no idea where he was. The Darksaber would be lost in seconds, swallowed up, and Din would never have to think about it again. He'd never have to see that look on Boba's face again, hear the way Boba had said, Mandalore. Din could forget all about it and go back to being just Din. Not the Mandalore, not even a Mandalorian, just himself, whoever that was now. I don't want to be... I can't be an Alor, not now. Din never would have led his tribe in the first place. He was Baroya. Leading wasn't his job. If Din hadn't broken his creed, he would have hunted until he'd either gotten too old to do it well or until he died. If Din had made it to be a true elder, Din would have come back to the covert, passed the Razor Crest off to the tribe's next hunter, and settled in to spend his days cooking and painting armor and patching things up around the covert, teaching foundlings and complaining about the pain in his knees. Someone else would have become the Allord. Annika, probably. There, Allord hadn't named a formal apprentice before Din had left Navarro with the kid in tow. She'd still been young and strong, and the covert hadn't been in obvious danger, where having an Allorica was necessary. But Din's credits had been on Annika for their tribe's next leader. Rina, maybe. Paz was patient enough with the foundlings, but gave terrible, irritable advice to the other warriors, and Din himself was never around. But Annika... Annika would have been a good Allord, Din thought. He closed his eyes. Grief returned, displacing some of Din's confusion, his dim anger. He hoped that Annika was still alive. She and the Allord both. Din wanted them to be alive, to be safe. He didn't want Paz to have to lose a brother and a wife and a leader all at the same time. Din wanted the Allord to be in front of her forge, shaping armor with steady, watchful patience. He wanted Annika and Paz to be there with all of the foundlings, walking them through the first steps of Parbevi. Din wanted to hear Den and Tosho singing again, switching between mournful love songs and awful, embarrassing tunes they'd picked up sneaking off to cantinas while the Allord wasn't looking. He wanted to listen to Rina going on and on about the latest device she'd build, the latest repair she'd make to the crest. He wanted the sturdy safety of the tunnels all around him, the caves of Dantooine, the comforting, quiet isolation of the high, open air above Kashyyyk. Din wanted to be there with them. His people. He wanted to be with them. He wanted to be with them. He screwed his eyes shut. Tears burned behind his eyes. His grip on the darksaber was so tight that the edges of its slanted hilt dug into his hand. I want to be with them, he thought. He wanted things to be like they'd been before. His life had been straightforward then. Not easy, but it had made sense. This new galaxy that Din had tripped into, following Grogu, following Kreese, following Boba, didn't. It didn't make sense. But I'm here. Whether or not Din understood it all didn't matter. He was here, and there was no way back, no matter what Boba said, no matter what Din thought about the creed, the what-ifs, the maybes. It wasn't something Din could fix or mend. He hadn't broken a bone that could be set or a beam that could be welded. He'd broken the creed. Din gave himself half a minute to sit there, eyes shut against the galaxy, darksaber biting into his hand. Then he relaxed his grip and opened his eyes. The image in his mind, the covert across a dozen planets, always somewhere new but always warm and comfortable, faded. I can't be with them. The thought cut, but it was true. Din couldn't go back to the way things had been before. He couldn't go back to the covert. But I'm not dead, either. Just because I can't return to the covert doesn't mean that I can't be here. Paz had acted like Din was already dead. Like everything that had made Din himself was already gone, like his heart and his mind and his spirit were gone, and Din's body was walking itself around without realizing that it shouldn't be. But that's not true. Din was alive. He'd broken the creed, but he was still alive. Din swallowed. Now I have to figure out what that means. Din's teachers, the Allord, his brothers and sisters in the covert, none of them had ever talked about what it might be to break the creed and live after breaking it. No one had ever shown Din the way. But I can find out. Din nodded to himself. It wasn't his best plan. It wasn't even really a plan at all. There was no navcomp to chart his next steps through the stars, no map he could follow, no coordinates he could punch in. But it was a conviction, a direction, and Din had done more with less. And, he thought, to guard against the awful grief in his chest, and I'm not alone. Din didn't have the covert anymore, but he had other allies, other places to go. Boba and Fennec and Nura were even, Din suspected, his friends. Like Pelimoto or Cobb Vanth. People that Din could trust, even if Boba was angry with him. If you're with me, then I'm with you, Boba had said. He'd meant it. Din had felt him mean it. Boba's word was Beskar, too. He might not want to talk to Din anymore, to share meals with him, to spar or play fight or help Din find that quiet place inside his own head, to work bruises into Din's back, to press kisses to Din's collarbones. But he wouldn't just turn Din out into the sands. Din took a steadying breath. He made himself loosen his grip on the darksaber. He made himself stand back up. I am not alone. Feeling steadier, Din heaved himself up to his feet, shaking sand out of the gaps in his armor, and looked around. He knew, or at least he hoped that he knew, where Boba would be. Even in his panic and grief, Din hadn't heard Boba's jetpack roaring overhead, hadn't heard any speeders or ships drift by overhead or out in the desert, so Din hoped that Boba was still back at the palace. Din swallowed, throat scraping. I told him to stop. That was a complicated feeling, too. He'd never said Gev before. Not during any of the nights he'd spent underneath Boba's hands. He'd thought about saying it a time or two, but he'd never said it. Part of Din was relieved that Boba had listened, that what Boba had told him was true. Din could stop it, could make Boba back off at any time. That Boba would listen. That was oddly freeing in its way. Din didn't have to worry about it anymore. He hadn't really worried about it before, at least not consciously, but still. The word and Boba's deference to it offered Din a layer of protection. He hadn't really understood that before, until he'd said it, and Boba had backed away. The other part of Din was just flat-out embarrassed. Boba had given Din Gev to use if Din got too overwhelmed underneath the flogger, if he'd panicked at the blindfold or the weight of Boba's hips cutting into his. He hadn't given it to use as an out during a conversation Din didn't want to have. I can apologize, Din told himself, squinting at the silver horizon. I just have to make it back, and then try to make Boba understand. I just have to get back. Everything else, I can think about everything else later. So, Din thought, scanning the horizon for any landmarks or structures that would help him orient himself in the desert. Where am I? The desert around him was featureless, a stretch of sand and bare rock the same as anywhere else in the Great Dune Sea. Din was fairly sheltered here. He'd landed in a sand dune, but there were rocks towering around him, sturdy and sun-bleached, their shadows long and deep. But they were the only tall rocks or ridges around that Din could see. There was a blue shadow to the far east that might have been a ridge or a plateau, but Din couldn't spot anything else. No half-buried settlements sticking out of the sand like blunted bones, no strange shapes made by rock arches or buttes. There was only the sand, rolling like a crate dragon's back in every direction. But ground navigation's not the only way to get around on Tatooine, Din thought. He'd first learned about astral navigation in the covert. The older warriors had loved to teach it to the younger ones. The best had been able to point to the stars from anywhere in the galaxy, on Kashyyyk, on Onderon, on Fest and Braca, and Navarro and Ryloth, and trace the same shapes in the stars from different angles. Look, they'd say, there's the old Shio bird, there's the Shriek Hawk, there's the Ak-Dog, the Drunken Soldier, the Great Alor. Din had learned even more constellations from the Tuscans. They had their own star stories and their own ways of mapping out the desert by its seasons. What a Mandalorian covert might call the Ok-Dog was the frontrunner of the Tusken's Anuba pack. The great Alor's eye was the Umar, the Emerald, and his helmet was the Bantha Mother. The Tuskens had the summer scythe, which rose when it was time to harvest Jaipur grass and Poonton seeds, and they had the Rainfather when it was time to gather near the oases during Tatooine's 2 or 3 weeks of rain. Young Tuskens took their blood rites when the Sedru tree sat squarely between Tatooine's three moons, and Bantha calves were always born as the far scouts slipped past the western horizon. Din craned his head back and studied the sky. There, he thought, tracing the shape of the warrior's knife, its tip the first star nearest to Chinini, Tatooine's smallest moon. I know where I am. Din had gone south and east of the palace. The Great Dune Sea expanded for miles and miles on all sides of Boba's territory, but Din had flown towards the very heart of the desert. He snorted. I'm not a teenager anymore, he scolded himself, vague embarrassment coming back to tug at him. I shouldn't act like one. Flying off like that without a plan. Panic could make even the most seasoned fighter do some stupid things, but it was hard to imagine anything more stupid, more needlessly risky, than flying off, alone and mostly unarmed, without food or water or even a way to cover his face against the relentless heat of the day, into the middle of Tatooine's largest desert. At least I know how to get back, Din thought bracingly. He could be back at the palace before the sun's rose. He hadn't quite figured out what he was going to do when he got there, yet. He wasn't sure what he was going to say. He was going to apologize to Boba, pelt paws with back to patches, avoid everyone else unless Boba got angry again, in which case Din intended to find Fennec and use her as a particularly sharp-tongued buffer. But I'm going back. Settling that argument in his own heart loosened something in Din's chest. I know Boba now, Din thought. He and Boba would probably argue again. Boba might decide that he wanted nothing to do with Din, that Din had lied, had pushed Boba too far. He might decide that even though Din wasn't a Mandalorian anymore, he had been Death Watch or close enough to Death Watch to be the same thing, and that he didn't want Din around. But he'll at least let me talk first. He'll listen to me. He listened to me when I said Gev. He'll keep listening. Boba had listened, even though he hadn't been flogging Din, even though he hadn't taken Din into the still, quiet place inside of Din's own head where listening to Boba, letting him control what was happening, was the most important thing. Boba had stopped anyway. He'd let Din go. He'll hear me out. Paz probably wouldn't hear Din out, but that was okay. Din didn't need Paz to listen or even to understand. I need him to rest and recover, to get back on his feet so he can protect those kids. That's all I need from him. If he wants to try and kill me, Din thought, he can try. But he hasn't been able to beat me in a fight since we were kids, and I won't make it easy for him. Mindset, Din shaded his eyes against the silver light of the moons and looked out across the desert. He could make it back, but he wanted to make sure he wasn't being watched first. Both Ashek's people and Vance had reported movement in the Dune Sea. Din couldn't see anything from this height. He turned around and boosted himself onto the rocks behind him, wincing as the motions jarred everything that already twinged and ached. Once he had the high ground, Din looked out across the desert again. The sands were still all around him, quiet and empty. Except there was something moving in the sky, trailing fire and smoke behind it. A distant roar echoed over the empty dunes. Din straightened, wary, and looked harder. He didn't have to squint for long. The shape came closer, the roar growing, and there was really only one thing that moved through the skies of Tatooine like that. A Mandalorian, Din thought, heart sinking. With a jetpack. Paz hadn't had a jetpack on Nevarro. Din hadn't seen it on him, but it might have been in one of Strill's gear rooms aboard the Huntress. Strill and Zhaig hadn't had jetpacks either. The only other Mandalorian on Tatooine that Din knew of with a jetpack was Boba Fett. Din thought, briefly, about pressing himself back into the shadows of the rocks and hoping Boba passed him by. Just because Dan had decided to shake himself off and fly back to the palace didn't mean that he was ready to face Boba now. But it was, Dan thought a little fatalistically, already too late. If he could see Boba, Boba could certainly see him. Din doubted that Boba was stupid enough to go flying in the desert without a helmet on. He probably had his visor and his HUD, thermal imaging switched on to track life moving in the desert. Hiding, Din thought, remembering Cobb Vanth hesitating at the top of the stairs leading down towards Boba's throne. Never helped a dune worm. Swallowing, flexing his fingers to try and stave off their nervous twitching, Din stepped farther out on his rock so that all of his armor caught the light of the moons. It worked. Boba caught sight of him on the rocks and changed course. He was only a click or so away, and then he was 100 yards, 100 feet, rocketing over Din's head before swinging back around, looping the rocks to land in the sand beneath Din. Once he'd landed, Boba tilted his head up to look at Din. His helmet was too dark, the paint too smooth and matte to catch the moonlight, but the edge of his visor caught a shard and reflected it. Din and Boba stared at each other for a long moment, silent. Then Boba called up. "Not thinking of jumping, are you?" The words were sharp, pointed. Din winced. "I deserved that," he thought wryly. "No," said Din. He turned his back on Boba for a moment to scramble back down the rock. Just trying to figure out where I am." Boba snorted. He gave Din his space, though. Made no movement to get any closer. Din watched him for a moment, feeling unaccountably nervous, then took a few cautious steps in Boba's direction. Boba didn't move, either to back away or to meet Din in the middle. He was as still as a stone. Like he was on Arcanus with the foundlings, Din thought. He frowned a little. He didn't know what to make of that idea. "I'm sorry," Din said, taking another step closer. "I'm..." Boba held up a hand, the movement sharp. Din closed his mouth. He swallowed reflexively and stopped moving. "What?" Boba finally said, voice tight. "Are you doing out here? I thought you'd gone to Mos Pelgo." "That probably would have been smarter," Din admitted. He shrugged with one shoulder. "I wasn't thinking. I didn't mean to come out here. I don't even know where here is. I just picked a direction." "Did you know," said Boba, almost conversationally, "that once I got the blast doors open, Fennec and I had to search the sand for your carking corpse?" Din did flinch at that. He hadn't... The blast doors worked, then, he thought. As soon as Din had jumped into the sky, the doors that protected Boba's rooms had come down. Boba hadn't seen Din fly off. He hadn't been able to. I wasn't jumping to fall, said Din. I just... He stopped again. I needed... It was either fly away or punch you, Din wanted to say. And if I'd started punching you, I don't know if I would have been able to stop. His body had been so afraid. Was still afraid, really, though Din was determined not to let panic overrun him again. Din cleared his throat. "I was surprised," he tried. That sounded better than out of my carking mind, anyway. And upset. Boba watched Din. His visor still had that shard of moonlight in it, bright and fierce. Din looked at it as long as he could, hoping that he was meeting Boba's eyes, then looked away. His skin prickled. "I'm sorry," Din repeated lowly. I wasn't trying to worry you." "You weren't trying to worry me," Boba echoed. His tone was flat. "Jiren." Din winced at that, the loss of familiarity. "You dropped your safe word on me and then you jumped out of my window." "And I'm sorry," Din said staunchly. He set his jaw. He didn't know what else Boba wanted to hear. "For which part?" Boba growled. "Both?" Boba pressed the heel of a hand to the middle of his forehead and pushed, like Din sometimes did with his own helmet, to feel it dig reassuringly into his forehead. Din just watched him, tense again. "You shouldn't be sorry for telling me to stop," Boba finally said. He sounded very tired. "Gev, I pushed you, okay? You tried to tell me to stop without the word, and I didn't listen. That's on me. You did the right thing." Something in Din's chest loosened at that. "But as for jumping out the window..." "I had my jetpack," Din pointed out. Boba took his hand away from his forehead and glared. Din could feel the strength of it even with the Beskar in between them. "Did you," said Boba, slowly and clearly, "remember that you had your jetpack on at the time?" Din paused. "I would have figured something out," he said. "My grappling hook, maybe? It wasn't..." "Hey! You gardaretish!" Boba snarled and tackled Din back into the sand dune. Din had only been half ready for it. He'd expected Boba to take a swing at him, something Din could duck or dodge, not tackle him. Din caught Boba with a grunt, taking most of the impact across his chest, their Beskar clattering half a dozen high, lingering notes where it hit together, but wasn't in the right stance. Boba pulled him right over, sending them both crashing down into the sand. For a handful of seconds, they struggled. Din hadn't been expecting to get tackled and didn't have the best angle to shove Boba off, but Boba didn't have enough purchase in the sand to stop Din from struggling entirely. Din got a knee up between them and shoved, digging it into the gap underneath the edge of Boba's cuirass. Boba swore and pinned both of Din's wrists. His grip was so strong that even with the gauntlets on, Din could feel the pressure. His armor creaked. Din briefly considered slamming his forehead into Boba's again, but Boba was wearing armor and Din wasn't. Din had no desire to end up back in medbay because he'd cracked his skull open against Boba's. Din pushed up with his knee instead, viciously satisfied at the half-hissing, half-growling sound Boba made. "Karking, quit it," Boba growled, his voice pitched just like an Alor calling out orders on the battlefield. And Din's whole body tripped over itself to obey. He'd gone still and pliant underneath Boba before he'd even fully realized what was happening. His reaction surprised Boba, too. Boba had been wrestling for control of Din's hands and hadn't expected Din to yield up so easily. He pulled too hard and Din cried out, his bat arm sparking white. Boba let go immediately, snatching his hand back. "Sorry," Boba said gruffly. He'd let Din go, but he hadn't moved anything else. His weight still pressed Din down into the sand. "I'm sorry. I didn't mean..." His fierce tone softened. "It's fine," Din muttered, pulling his hands toward his chest. He relaxed his knee, pulling it away from Boba's gut. "I'm sorry, too. I didn't mean to... to fight back like this. To shout Gev in Boba's face. To jump out of the tower. To burden Boba with all of this." Din swallowed, chest sore, and tried again. "I am sorry," he said. For worrying you, at least. I was just..." "Like I said," Boba shifted his weight a little so that he wasn't bearing down quite so much, though he was still keeping Din pinned in the sand. His new position let Boba rest his helmet against the top of Din's pauldron, which he did. Their Beskar murmured together. "I pushed," Boba continued, addressing Din's shoulder. You asked me to stop before you used your word. I didn't listen. I should have." Din looked at the top of Boba's helmet. He wondered what the little red stripes meant, stamped on the edges of Boba's visor. Din thought that the stripes might have been gold back when Cobb Vanth had worn the armor, but they were red now. Din wondered what that meant. "I'm the one who panicked," Din said. You weren't doing anything. We were just talking, but I..." "Had a long, kung-awful day," Boba suggested. His voice was muffled against Din's shoulder, but Din liked the contact, so he didn't push against it. You told Vizsla that you were Darmanda, didn't you, on the Huntress?" "Yes," Din said. "That's why you were sitting in the cargo bay with your helmet off." It wasn't a question, but Din answered it anyway. Yes, he said. Boba was quiet for several seconds. Din abruptly wished that they'd shed their armor, their flight suits, their clothes. He wanted Boba's skin pressed against his own. He wanted to feel Boba's heartbeat echoing in his own ribs, his own lungs matching Boba's steady breathing. Din settled for shifting a little himself so that he could press his hand, gloved, to the edges of Boba's Carta Beskar, fingers tracing its smooth, clean edges. I don't understand, Boba finally said, voice loud in the quiet. Why saving your kid makes you Darmanda? Why can't you show your face? Even Death Watch showed their faces. Kreez does, and she was Kirstad for years. That's the creed we swore, said Din, aiming for steady. I don't know why. They never told us why, just that it was the creed. We all followed it. All of you? Din nodded. From the time we were foundlings. Boba's silence this time was more potent. Heavier, like he disapproved. A faint flash of anger flared somewhere behind Din's ribcage. It was the creed, Din repeated forcefully. No one made me keep it, but I swore to it, to become a Mandalorian. That's how it was for us. He'd almost said, that's how it's done. That's how you become Mandalorian. But that's not true for Boba. I shouldn't have pushed, Boba finally muttered. I didn't. You carry that thing around. He meant the darksaber. Din knew it instinctively. You fight with Bo-Katan Kreese. I thought you knew what it meant. But I should have known differently. Boba's tone took on a wry edge. You weren't kidding when you told me that you didn't speak Mandoa, were you? His question was heavy and double-edged, like a Verd knife without a hilt. You don't know what you are, Boba had asked, staring at Din across the floor of his rooms. The floor where their makeshift sparring ring was still painted, where Boba had pressed Din down just a few nights ago. Do you? Din lay there in the sand, the word on the tip of his tongue. Gev. He could make Boba stop, and Boba would listen. Din knew that Boba would listen. Gev. But Din didn't say it. He tucked the word back behind his teeth and said, I can't be the Mandalore, Boba. I can't. Boba was silent. I know you never swore my creed, Din continued. He felt Boba tense, but Boba still kept his silence. But I did. Din tilted his head back and looked up at the stars. I did, Boba. And maybe I need to think about it more. Really think about it. Maybe let Paz yell at me. That helped put some things into perspective. But it's mine, Din said. It was mine. And I can't just decide that breaking it didn't matter. Doesn't still matter, even if you don't agree. You didn't swear to it, you don't believe in it, that's fine, but I... But you did, said Boba heavily. Or you do. Din shrugged a little, sending sand skittering down his back. I did, he agreed. I do. Who'd know? Boba asked. His voice had gone soft. Din, Jerrica, if being a Mandalorian is what you want, who'd know? If you decided to put your helmet back on, follow your own creed, who'd know? I would, said Din. I'd know. And Paz, too. Assuming his leg doesn't rot off and take him with it, he'll tell the others. Our people. They'd know. Have you ever thought, Boba murmured, cold metal cheek pressed up against Din's, that maybe you've got too much honor? Din huffed. No, he said. Well, you do, Boba grumbled. Gar Oriboisha, Orikarta. I don't know what that means, Din said. Boba sighed. It means, he said, that you're a menace. You can't be the Mandalore, you say. That's fine. You don't want it, you don't want it. But if you don't want it because you don't think you deserve it... Boba, said Din warningly, Gev leaping to the front of his mouth again. He closed his eyes and breathed deeply. It was hard to panic like this. Boba was such a solid, reassuring weight above him, pressing into him on nearly every side, that Din couldn't help but feel protected, sheltered. He should have felt trapped, pinned, should have been panicking, fighting, thrashing to get free, but I know Boba. And thrashing hadn't helped throw Boba off before. Boba had pinned Din down several times. It had hurt a few times even, but it was still safe. Boba subsided with a grumble. Din sighed. Why does it matter so much to you? He asked. It's not... This is my burden, Din tried to explain. It's not yours. We're friends. Boba shifted a little, almost like he'd flinched underneath his helmet, which made Din stumble a little over his words. We're friends. I'm sorry. I know that I lied, but it's still my burden. You don't have to carry it for me. You can't. You weren't elite. It matters, said Boba, his voice a little ragged now, because it's not right. Your creed... I didn't take it, Boba continued. I don't know what all it entails, but... It matters to you, doesn't it? Reluctantly, Din nodded. And it's causing you pain, said Boba. Din nodded again. It was. There was no point in lying about it. It is, Din agreed. There are other creeds out there, Boba argued. Creeds with give in them, creeds with room for mistakes. You could... I couldn't. Din interrupted, thinking that he understood now, at least a little more than he had up in Boba's rooms. Din had asked Boba, on the Huntress, what the difference was between the pain Boba could inflict with a flogger or some clamps with his hands, and other kinds of pain. You can stop it, Boba had said. If we were up in my rooms, you could make me stop. Din couldn't make this, the grief in his chest, the weight of it, stop. Not even by following another creed, picking a new set of words, putting his helmet on, calling himself Mando again. None of that would make this stop, Din thought. Why not? Boba demanded. Din turned his face towards Boba so that their foreheads were pressed together. The cool metal of Boba's helmet soothed some of the stinging in his scraped forehead, his cheek. Boba, Din said. Not every pain in the galaxy will go away if you say the right words. If you do the right things. Boba stilled. I didn't make a mistake, either, Din continued. It hurt, of course it hurt, but he made himself keep talking. When I broke the creed, it wasn't a mistake. It was for Grogu, and it worked. We got the kid, took down Gideon... That wasn't a mistake. But it wasn't, Din said firmly, with all the conviction he could pull up from his belly. I'd do it again. Your brother wants to kill you, said Boba. He does. But, Din said, trying to lighten his tone a little, Paz hasn't been able to beat me in a fight since we were kids and he had two good legs, so... That drew a snort out of Boba, rusty and raw. You were a menace, Boba agreed. But you're outnumbered. Vizsla's got the Verdike. Are you sure about that? Din asked. Jag thinks the sun shines out of your shebs. You could probably win him over. True, said Boba. And this killing Vizsla tried to do. There's no rules about having to face him on your own, are there? There are, Din admitted. But they're rules for Mandalorians. I'm Darmanda, remember? I can bring an extra blaster or two to the fight. Didn't he? Boba muttered, and the endearment was a little victory. Din's heart lifted. Boa's arm tightened around Din's middle. The strength of his grip was a little victory, too. Proof that Boba was with Din still. That if Paz tried to kill Din, Boba would stand between them. Or, at least, beside me, Din thought. Paz might want to kill me, Din said. We're supposed to, that's what we're taught. To spare the Darmanda from having to live without the tribe, without their honor. But I don't have to lay down and let him put a blaster bolt in my head, Boba. I don't want him to. Boba dug a testing elbow into Din's ribs. Din shoved him back. All right, said Boba. All right, fine. You say you're Darmanda. As long as you're not going to throw yourself out of my bedroom window anymore, you can be Darmanda. Gracious of you, Din muttered. Nijoha, Boba said. We're going to have to talk about this, Jerica. Din scowled, even as his heart lifted again at the nickname, the proof of Boba's lingering affection. Din was thoroughly sick of talking about this. Everyone who mattered to Din knew that he was Darmanda now, so Din wasn't sure what they had to talk about. There was nothing to talk about. Not even what I've been thinking, Din muttered to himself. The complicated tangle of grief and anger and confusion he'd started to untangle the first time he'd been laying in the sand dune. That was a knot for Din to unwind, not Boba. Later, Din said. Much later, he added to himself. Never if I can get away with it. Boba wasn't likely to let him, but still. Still, Din thought. Later, Boba agreed. With an enormous sigh, he heaved himself first to his knees, looming over Din, then to his feet. Once he was upright, Boba dropped his hand down and pulled Din up, too. They both shook, sand scattering everywhere, then looked at each other. Something pulled at the corner of Din's thoughts. How'd you find me if you didn't see me fly off? He wondered, looking around again. The desert was still featureless and vast. The odds of Boba finding Din out here, only an hour or two after Din had flown off in his panic, seemed vanishingly small. Boba shook his head. He sounded like he was grimacing. I didn't know you were out here, Boba said gruffly. His voice was muffled by Din's shoulder. Otherwise I would have brought your helmet. It's fine, Din said. He ran a hand through his hair, scattering even more sand. I'll survive. Will you? Boba reached out, slow enough to give Din time to pull away if he wanted to. And when Din didn't pull away, Boba caught Din's chin and tilted his face from side to side, no doubt studying Din's scrapes and scratches. You sure you're not going to lose another fight with the sand dune? Gar, what's the Mandalorian word for obnoxious pain in my shebs? Din asked. Mandoa, Boba corrected. His gloves were warm. He let go of Din's chin and pulled away, but not before brushing a thumb over one of Din's cheekbones, clearing away some grit. And I'm not teaching you how to swear, Jaren. Fine, said Din, relaxing. He watched Boba out of the corner of his eye. You're an obnoxious pain in my ass, he said, in Rill. Boba snorted. How to swear in Mandoa, then? Ask one of Kreese's Verdike. Rank-and-file grunts usually have the best ones, anyway. Din rolled his eyes. Said like a man who doesn't know any swears, he said. Din reached for a harmless memory, one he could touch with only a faint stab of pain. The Allure washed Paz's mouth out with Sludir soap once. He called her a... Din paused, ears still burning faintly to think about it. Boba leaned in, head tilted to the side curiously. Din sighed and told him. They had been on Ryloth at the time. Rill was half-spoken and half-Leku movement, but that hadn't stopped Paz from immediately picking up anything and everything profane. Boba chuckled. I would have taken some Sludir soap to him, too, he said. Still not teaching you how to swear, though. Din chuckled back. The sound was hoarse, but he managed it. You said that you didn't expect to see me out here, Din said, looking down at himself to make sure he hadn't lost any gear to the sand. He caught sight of his left gauntlet and frowned. The gentle, thin strip of light that glowed around the edges of Din's comlink had gone out. When Din looked closer, he saw that the surface of it had cracked. I think you broke my comlink, Din said, shaking his wrist out. The device's screen flickered, but didn't spark back to life. "Sorry," said Boba, not sounding all that apologetic. "You can have one of the spares Fennec keeps around when we get back to the palace." Din heard the question in Boba's voice, even though Boba hadn't asked one. "Are you coming back?" he was asking. "Sure," Din agreed. "Back at the palace." "Still not answering my question, though. If you weren't out here looking for me, what are you doing? We're 20-30 miles from the palace?"
"Twice that, actually," said Boba.
Din winced. He hadn't realized he'd gone so far. It was easy to eat up some distance in the jetpack. He resisted the urge to apologize again. "What are you doing out here if you're not looking for me?" Din asked again. "You weren't looking for me, were you?" Boba's reticence put Din on edge again.
"Ah," said Boba again. "No, I wasn't. You seemed like you needed space," he said. "I wasn't looking for you."
Din's brow furrowed. "So what are you doing out here?"
"Looking for Ushib," said Boba grimly. "Picked up a distress call from her about an hour after you left."
Din straightened. "Ushib, she's in trouble?"
"Don't know for sure, but it seems likely," Boba said. "She calmed Fennec. Fennec got a bit of information out of her. Ushib had just passed the dragon's backbone. Everything was fine. Then Fennec heard something, and the comm cut out. We haven't been able to raise Ushib since."
Din's whole body, despite its exhaustion, came on alert again.
"Ushib is a Jita," Din thought. "A medic. She's the best chance that Paz has right now."
"Where's the dragon's backbone?" Din asked sharply, already searching the horizon.
"It's, what, a ridge?"
"Sandstone spurs, yeah," Boba said. He pointed further south. "Not too far from Spotted Anuba's usual stomping grounds."
"What did Fennec hear over the comm?"
Boba spread his hands.
"She just said that she heard something," he replied. "Couldn't say what, just that she'd heard it and that it set her on edge. And when Fennec tells me she's on edge..."
"I'd listen too," Din thought. Fennec was level-headed, even-tempered, cold as a night on Hoth, but steady. For her to get nervous.
"You got some spare fuel?" Din asked, still searching the horizon.
"I do," said Boba, tone wary. "But you're not fully armored. You should head back to the palace. I can find Ushib."
"What if she's hurt, too?" Din challenged. "If she's been scooped up by slavers or Gorgas people?"
"You think Gorga's behind this?"
"I think we're being watched," said Din bluntly. "All of us. Anyone who comes and goes from the palace regularly." Someone had been waiting in the desert when Din had taken Geeta home. If they, whoever they were, had bothered keeping an eye on Geeta, who was just a kid tending bar a few nights a week, they were almost certainly watching Ushib, too.
Boba's expression, thunderous, told Din that Boba agreed.
It could just be a coincidence, Din told himself. The desert was never safe, not even for a Tusken grandmother. Anything could have happened. A sandstorm, a canyon crate, even a speeder accident. But for Ushib to go missing only a few days after Geeta and I were attacked... No, thought Din, no, that's too much of a coincidence. Geeta hadn't been the target of that attack on the road. Din had. Whoever had been watching had seen Din appear and decided to try and get rid of one of Boba's most prominent allies.
Ushib. Maybe, if we're lucky, Gorga's people think she's just a scout. Someone who goes back and forth, reports what Ashek and his people have seen in the desert. If Gorga's people knew that Ushib was not just Boba's cook, but his medic, too.
Fennec said that there are spies inside the palace, Din thought grimly. His instincts twitched. He was right about this. He knew he was right about this. It made an awful, horrible kind of sense. Attacking a medic was a coward's action, but it was smart, too.
We've already got wounded back at the palace. Din curled his hands into fists, tightening them until his gloves creaked, then looked at Boba.
I'm helping, Din said flatly.
Boba's mouth pressed into a thin line, but he must have seen the determination in Din's eyes because he didn't argue.
You have flares? He asked. Dan took quick stock of his kit. No, he said. His left gauntlet was mostly empty. Dan had burned through the last of his whistling birds on the light cruiser, and none of Kreese's people were armorers. Here, Bubba said, fishing a few flares out from a pouch strapped to his leg. Fuel, too. He unhooked a small canister from underneath his jetpack and tossed it to Dan, who took that, too. Quadrant by quadrant. She was north of the dragon's backbone when she calmed Fennec. Don't get more than 3 clicks away from me, all right? You see Ushib, you see anything, fire off a flare. I'll do the same, okay? Okay, Dan agreed. Don't do anything stupid, Bubba warned. I'd rather not have to haul you and Ushib back on my own. Same for you, Dan returned. You've got the only working calm. Bubba snorted. 3 clicks, he repeated, then fastened his helmet back on and took off, roaring up into the sky. Dan took a handful of seconds to secure everything, to check over his weapons and make sure no sand had gotten somewhere it could cause a jam, and then he followed Bubba. Bubba tore off to the southeast, trailing smoke. Dan followed, but angled himself towards the southwest. 3 clicks wasn't a wide range, not up in the sky, but Dan did his best to stay in that range. He knew the boundary was mostly so Bubba could keep Dan within a reachable distance if something happened. If whoever had jumped Ushib had brought along a pulse rifle and felt like trying to shoot Dan or Bubba out of the sky. Dan tried not to chafe at it. Bubba was trying to protect Dan, and himself. That means that he probably does forgive me, Dan reasoned. It at least meant that Bubba still cared for him, that Bubba wanted Dan around, at least, and safe. Bubba had said as much, Dan thought. He still ached a little where Bubba had collided with him and tackled him into the sand. Dan was going to have another bruise, even despite the Beskar. But Bubba's actions backed up his words, and it was Bubba's actions that settled Dan the most, that made the raw, suspicious corner of his mind quiet down. I didn't ruin everything, Dan thought. He knew that Bubba was still angry. Dan was still angry, too, dimly and distantly. But Bubba didn't hate Dan, not if he still cared enough to keep Dan close at hand. He doesn't hate me for being Deathwatch, for being Darmanda. The thought was still small, an ember, but it was warming, and Dan wanted to wrap it up and tuck it away inside of his chest, safe and protected. He wanted to be able to examine it later, to feel its warmth. Later, Dan reminded himself, focusing on the task at hand. Bubba had become just a thin streak of smoke in the sky 3 clicks distant. The desert below Dan was still mostly sand, but some rocks and ridges had appeared too. The sky was still dark, lit only by the moons. Gumrasan had started to plod towards the horizon, pulling Chinini and Gormessa along behind it, but the sun still had a few hours before they rose over the desert. I really should have brought my helmet, Dan thought. He didn't really want to drop any lower and potentially put himself in the range of anyone with a long-range rifle, but Dan didn't really have any choice. He couldn't see much from this height, only vague shapes, and if Ushib was hurt, if she'd been ambushed, Dan needed to be close enough to search for her in the dunes. Sorry, Bubba, Dan thought, adjusting his angle so that he dipped lower, wind ruffling his hair as he dropped. A ridge of silvery rocks was rising ahead of Dan. He dropped a few hundred feet, still well above the ground, and circled them. This must be the dragon's backbone. The rocks were sandstone spurs, like Bubba had said, banded different shades of white and silver and blue. In the sunlight, they'd be red, wind-weathered and warned, pocked by Kyrick flies. The spurs were laid out in a long, wandering ridge, kinked and crooked, and from up here Dan could see how they'd gotten their name. The rocks looked like a crate dragon's spine, meandering this way and that like a dragon's back as it stretched out and warmed itself in the suns. This is where Ushib was last, then, Dan thought, dropping even lower. He circled the rocks a few more times, drifting closer and closer as each successive pass showed Dan more of the rocks. No snipers, he thought. He didn't have thermal imaging to confirm, but the rocks themselves were bare and harsh. Climbing up them without a jetpack, or at least very good equipment, would be a challenge. The top of the ridge was empty. Dan dropped even lower, close enough that if he wanted, he could cut his jetpack and land on one of the rocks.
He didn't land, but instead started searching the ground around the spurs. There, he thought, finding a track, long and smooth and flat, in the sands. A bantha path. If Ushib had planned to make the trip from the spotted Anubis territory back to the palace in a day and a half, she wasn't traveling by bantha. She most likely had a speeder, like Ashek and his warriors. But Tuscans, even modern-minded ones, were a people of habit, and even though the spotted Anuba didn't keep bantha anymore, Din doubted that they'd forgotten all of the old bantha paths through the Great Dune Sea. The bantha know the best way through the sand. Where the ground was firmest, where the water was, where bantha mothers could stop and rest in the shade, where the bulls could wallow and cool off. Din picked up a little more height, making sure he could still see Boba in the distance. He could, though Boba had been reduced to a faint orange flicker, his jetpack glowing like a candle, then dropped again, keeping 400 or 500 feet off the ground. She'd gotten past the dragon's backbone, Din thought, turning north. But not much farther, so whatever had happened to her had to have happened there. There was a speeder lying on its side, half buried in a sand dune. Din's stomach dropped for a second, but as he drew closer, he could see that it was just an abandoned speeder. There were no bodies. Din shifted his gaze, scouring the ground around the fallen speeder. There. Tracks. Footprints in the sand. Large ones. Sentience in boots. At least two more speeders. Din could see their tracks, straight lines cut into the desert where no straight lines normally existed, and immediately swung off after them. He did take the time to fire off a flare, keeping his promise to Boba, but picked up speed as he followed the speeder tracks. The speeders, two of them, and fairly powerful ones, to throw up sand on either side of the thrusters like they had gone north. The lack of a body by the crashed speeder made Din hope that Ushib was still alive. Hutt thugs wouldn't bother with a burial. If they had killed Ushib, they would have left her for the Anuba. Din followed the speeder tracks for 2 or 3 miles, still heading north. He'd slowed down enough to search for any other signs along the path, which was why he saw the second crash speeder. It was laying on its side, still smoking faintly, and there was a body. There were two bodies, actually. Din dropped into a crouch and landed for long enough to check. Both were human, Utmian, offworlders. They hadn't come dressed for the desert. Only one had goggles. The other, a youngish human man, was so wind and sandburned he looked like his entire face was going to peel away. The one with goggles was a woman, and she was older. The speeder crash had done for the man, if Din had to guess, but the woman... The woman's throat had been cut. From behind, by the depth of the wound. Whatever had given the woman the injury had been sharp. My credits are on a crate-bone knife, Din thought, jumping back up into the sky. The jetpack whined. Din hoped he'd find Ushib soon. He was going to need to stop and refuel. Good for Ushib. She'd killed her attackers then. They probably hadn't bothered to check a Tuscan woman for weapons. Everyone, even off-worlders, knew that it was the Tuscan men who fought in raiding parties and warbands, who attacked settlers and hunted for moisture farmers in the dunes. Idiots, thought Din. This is the desert. Everyone fights. Din followed the now solitary speeder track, which was still aimed north, towards Mos Eisley. He didn't have to fly very far. Din hoped that Boba was behind him, but didn't want to take his eyes off the sands to check. There, snaking its way between a ridge and a wandering sand dune, was a speeder. Ushib, I hope. Din circled her a few times, letting the moons flash off his armor. Ushib was spotted Anuba. The spotted Anuba knew Din. At least they knew his armor. Din and Ushib hadn't ever met, but Din had hoped that she'd heard at least half as much about him as he'd heard about her. Once he was sure that she'd seen him, Din dropped down and landed lightly on one of the ridges, high enough up that he could dodge a blaster bolt if it turned out that the Tuscan on the speeder, and it was a Tuscan, Din had seen their robes flapping in the wind, wasn't Ushib and wasn't friendly. Din did see Boba in the distance, a small speck of fire coming closer. Good, Din thought. He looked down into the sands and waited for the Tuscan to approach. As the speeder, a 74Z, its nose bent in by a recent collision, but otherwise functional enough, came closer, Din let his guard drop a little. The Tuscan on the speeder was a woman. The difference wasn't always easily spotted by outsiders. There weren't any differences in stature or size between Tuscan men and Tuscan women, and all Tuscans wore protective masks and gear to ward off the worst of the sand and the wind and the suns. But Din had spent plenty of time among the Tuscra and knew the differences. Male Tuscans wore cowls made of layered scraps of fabric, carefully wrapped each morning in the privacy of their tents. Tuscan women wore cowls that were one long single piece of rich fabric, each stained with dyes made from the herbs and roots a tribe could gather from inside its territory. This Tuscan's cowl was the color of rust. Din could see that it had been red once, rich and deep, but had faded from years and years in the suns. 4 womp rat tusks were sewn underneath her cowl, 2 on each side, 1 to mark each child she had raised to adulthood. Her face was covered with an elaborate mask that had been inlaid with fragments of canyon crate pearls and burnished dark wood and even tiny, glittering gemstones the canyon sometimes gave up. Banded blue zerd and bright green umar, fine translucent barji that glittered like the distant stars. Din took her appearance in, confirming what he'd hoped, what he'd already known. She was of high status. The gemstones set into her mask were usually given as gifts by younger females in the tribe, payment for a lesson taught or childbirth eased. The Tuscan woman's bloodmate had been a successful hunter, too, to have brought her so many crate dragon pearls. The dark wood inlaid into her mask was from a safi tree which grew along oases. Red dye was common among the high mountain tribes where gumar trees grew and dropped their heavy red fruits. The high mountains were a long way from here. The White Bantha had taken Din with them to visit the mountains once, and he remembered being surprised to see green on Tatooine. There weren't many tribes in the mountains, though. The mountains had a growing season, but it didn't last a full year, and the growing season was the only time that life in the mountains was tolerable. A high-status Tuscan woman, riding alone through the desert, Din thought. She was on a speeder, so she had to be spotted Anuba, though Din didn't know of any high mountains that would foster gumar trees in spotted Anuba lands. She could only be one Tuscan. Relief swarmed in Din's chest. Din had to swallow it back as he climbed off his rock, dropping his eyes deferentially. The woman let him approach, watching from her speeder with her impassable mask trained on Din's face. Din pressed a hand to his chest over his heart to greet her. The Tuscan woman pressed her hand to her own chest, greeting Din back. "I know who you are," Din said, tracing the words with his hands. "You're..." He paused. He didn't know her name sign. He settled on a sign he did know. Din spread all of the fingers on his right hand and touched the corner of his chin, moving his hand forward in 2 small motions. "You're the grandmother of the spotted Anuba," he said. The Tuscan woman nodded. Her womp rat tusks made her look fearsome. "I am Ushib," she said, teaching Din her name. The motions made him smile tiredly. Sharp Knife, she'd named herself. A good name for Tuscan grandmother. "I know who you are, too," Ushib continued. "You are the dragon slayer of the northern desert, the friend of the White Bantha and the Sun Rock." "I'm Din," Din said. His name was given in 2 parts, too. A finger tapped right over his chest, over the Karta Beskar set into his armor, then a hand at the side of his helmet. "Din," said Ushib, greeting him formally. "What are you doing out in the desert, Dragonslayer? Shouldn't you be safe behind walls? The dunes are not safe at night, not even for someone like you." "I'm..." Din paused again. "The desert isn't safe." An understatement, he wanted to say. "I've seen what work you make of those hot thugs. You're as dangerous as anything down here." If he said it, he might even make Ushib laugh. She'd know just how dangerous she was. But Din didn't want to offend her accidentally. Boba was close with Ushib. He'd said that she'd been the one to carve out his place with the spotted Anuba, that she'd protected him while he'd been hurt and recovering. "She took a liking to me," Boba had said. "I'm looking for you," Din said, settling on that. "We were worried. I'm with..." Din faltered again, not sure of Boba's name and Tuscan sign. But he'd learned a few new signs from Ashek while they'd hunted down the slavers who'd crossed into the spotted Anuba's oasis. "I'm with the king," Din said, shaping the word like he'd seen Ashek shape it. Ushib huffed a laugh.
Boba, she said. Din watched her hands carefully, startled by what he'd seen her sign. Ushib had used the sign for fire spirit. The Hara Ali, the spirits that Tuscan story singers said wandered the sands at night, burning and strange. But Ushib could only be talking about Boba. Boba, Din said, copying the sign. Ushib nodded. Boba, she repeated. Din watched again, trying to figure it out, his brow furrowed. Not fire spirit, he thought, running through the sign again, slower. But revenant? Someone who's died but come back. Come back with a purpose. Not with vengeance. The revenant spirits weren't the Hara Ali, who'd never been alive, and they weren't the Rushir either, who had been alive but wandered the sands after death, bent on destruction. The revenants were supposed to be different. Din couldn't help but shiver. He'd never seen one of the spirits that the Tuscans claimed wandered the desert at night. Wasn't sure that they existed at all, really, even though the Tuskra believed in them. But he'd heard a few stories. The Hara Ali were dangerous, but mostly uninterested in other sentients. They were only really dangerous when someone, usually a foolish warrior in the stories, a hard-headed young upstart who wouldn't listen to his elders, tried to control them for their powers. Revenants, Atikat, the Returned, were different. Not quite Rushir, but spirits that had once been alive, according to the story singers. Revenants would return to the living sands to settle old debts, to take vengeance. A Rushir was a spirit of mindless destruction, easily avoided once one knew the signs. A revenant had a mission. They were said to swallow up whole villages in their quest for vengeance and justice. That's not inaccurate, Din thought, thinking of the way Boba looked sometimes, of the ferocity he held in his eyes, in the brutal arc of his Gaddafi. Ushib might even have given Boba his name sign out of admiration, affection, respect. He's coming too, Din added. He lifted his chin in the direction of the sky, where the little flicker of light that marked Boba's jetpack was growing larger. We heard that you were in trouble. Not in trouble, Ushib corrected, making a hissing sound to convey her annoyance. I was slowed down. Nothing serious. I saw, Din said. Ushib patted her side, where she wore a loose belt over the draping folds of her cowl and her robes. I am never, she said, without a knife. Wise, said Din as Boba finally reached them and circled once, twice, before dropping down to join them. That was not, he said to Din, sounding disgruntled. Only 3 clicks. Din shrugged. Trail was fresh. Boba snorted, then turned to Ushib and greeted her properly. Their greeting was more familiar, was much warmer than Din's and Ushib's had been, but Din supposed that made sense. Boba did know Ushib, and she greeted him like she'd greet a son of her own clan. Din looked away politely, giving them their space. Boba and Ushib exchanged a flurry of signs, catching each other up with what had happened. How did they catch you? Boba asked at one point, slowly following Ushib's signs. He signed as he was talking, but his hands were slower than Din's, less sure. Less practiced, Din realized. Din had learned Tuskra young. Boba had come into it later, and it showed in his hands. He spoke well, didn't stumble over words, didn't sign the wrong thing. But he wasn't as fast as a born Tuscan or someone like Din, who'd added Tuskra as his 4th or 5th language. They were waiting for me in the rocks, said Ushib. She shook her head and mimed spitting, a grave insult among the Tuskra. Cowards. They waited until Atin had gone back to the oasis, until I was alone. Were you followed to the oasis? Din asked. Ushib shook her head. Not that I saw, she reported. We're all being watched, Boba said grimly. A jolt of something, awareness tinged red with alarm, went through Din. They're watching the palace, Din said. They know who's leaving and when. They know you've left, Din didn't say. He didn't want to get Boba's back up again. And they'll know that I left, too. Neither of us are in the palace. Boba understood anyway. His spine stiffened. We can make it back fast, he said.
The path's not a straight one from the ground, but through the air.
On the ground, it's, what, another 2 hours? Din asked. Speeders could get up to a good clip, but there were rocks in the way, canyons, ridges unstable enough to collapse and take an unobservant rider with them.
Boba nodded.
Kirk, 2 hours, he thought. That was a long time to leave the palace unprotected. If the Hutts knew that Boba was gone...
We're gonna have to split up, Boba growled.
Din looked at him.
Boba shrugged.
It's not ideal, said Boba. I'd rather not do it. But the palace... Somebody's gotta warn Fennec, prepare for an attack. And somebody's gotta stay here with Ushib, follow her back at her pace. Neither of us can get all the way back flying her, I don't have the fuel.
You want me to go back to the palace, Din said, frowning hard.
He didn't like the idea of leaving Boba out here.
I do, Boba admitted.
Why?
Several reasons, Boba said. First of them being that I, and he plucked at the edges of his frayed robe, can pass as a Tusken at least from a distance. If I take off my basque, me and Ushib can pass as a pair of raiders. Good cover for anyone who's looking for Boba Fett. But you...
All I've got on is my armor, Din thought unhappily. But he nodded. What Boba said made sense.
And the palace.
Paz and the others are there.
Fine, Din said.
Boba hummed, and this time it sounded a little relieved.
Thank you, he said.
Din nodded again. Ushib signed her own thanks, watching Boba and Din with her inscrutable mask.
It'll only be a few hours, Boba said. We'll be quick and careful, won't we, Ushib?
You're not going to fly, are you? Din asked.
Boba shook his head. He jerked his thumb back over his shoulder.
Gonna grab that other speeder, he said. Won't fly unless I have to. Keep an eye out for us. We'll be fine, Din.
We can cut through the sunken sands, Ushib added.
She threw a significant look at Boba.
They are no longer as dangerous as they were when the Pit of Carcoon was inhabited.
We'll cut through the sunken sands, Boba agreed. Not too many outsiders, even Hutt Skuggs, are brave or stupid enough to wander there.
In, out, we'll meet you and Fennec back at the palace. Sound like an acceptable plan of attack?
Sound like an acceptable plan of attack, Boba asked, looking sideways at Din.
Din sighed.
It didn't, but he didn't see any other options.
Yeah, he said.
Boba was still wearing his helmet, so it was hard to judge whether or not Din was looking him in the eye, but Din did his best anyway.
I hate this, Din thought.
But I'll do it.
Okay.